The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to create a life that's intentional and dynamic? Welcome to The Intentional Spirit with your host, Reverend Temple Hayes.
Oh my God, that's exactly what intentional spirits do in the midst of any obstacle or adversarial energy. We become more dynamic. We become more stepping into that inner place of grace and essence and empowerment. And that's exactly what we do. We focus on modeling that wonderful creative energy of possibility to our children so that when they look into our eyes, they see hope, they see knowing, and they see moving forward with a life that is even yet to come. This life is the most precious gift. And wherever we are in externals, whether we're facing a pandemic or we're facing a life challenge at this particular time or the loss of a loved one or a divorce or changes in career or whatever, there's something grounded within the need of someone to remain intentional. And that is what has brought great leaders to the forefront. It's what brings great authors out of the closet, just like our great guest today. And I'm thrilled because this particular guest, Anthony Manna, Dr. Manna, has an amazing impact with children and with parents. And he is just, well, he's just a ton of fun. I just met him and just thinking about him makes me laugh. So there you go. So you're in for a treat. And thank you, Anthony, for being on our show today. I couldn't wait to talk to you. And I just imagine everybody around you is, you just keep people laughing, don't you?
I try. Reverend Temple, thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here. The sun, as soon as we started talking, I'm in Northeast Ohio, and the sun came out with your voice speaking to me. So there's a certain power going on here that I appreciate. Thank you.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, our souls have probably been calling each other to meet for quite some time. That's usually the way it works. It's that underworking, isn't it? And when we are intentional, like you are and like I am, in that we say yes. We seize the moment. I can just tell by looking in your eyes at your website, and everybody else can join me at anthonymannabooks.com, that you've had, you could tell a lot of stories about your life. And I know that you are a tremendous storyteller, and we're going to get into that. We're going to talk about your book. But how did your path shape you to where you are now? I mean, I'm a full believer in that we're born, but then we get birth like so many times, you know, if we'll let it happen. And how did you get shape-shifted into doing the work that you do and making such an impact that you make?
Well, that's what a great question. I mean, I think the most important thing would be to talk about this wonderful family that nurtured me. I'm the youngest one, and there were six of us, and my sisters and my brother nurtured me very, very much. My mother was so occupied with taking care of us that, yes, I could rely on her. She came from a village in Italy, a farm girl, and she struggled with English, she struggled with life, but she always had a positive attitude. And she loved her children. And so there I had my sisters, my brother, my mother, my father. And so, I took that with me into the Catholic schools. And I liked being nurtured by them too, because they they gave me messages about how to keep my life together and how to survive, basically. And they were there were lessons. There were always lessons being taught to me, you know. And eventually what happened was, to be very honest, was I wound up in a Catholic seminary studying for the priesthood, left the seminary and went into a monastery. And I did that for about 5 years. And oh my, was that ever the place I needed to be? Especially the monastery, because it was a farm, and I just felt like it was like the rhythm that I needed to be, I'm going to use the word, intentional. And it gave me such hope to be working in community. And I'll never forget that, you know. I mean, it could have been the Army, it could have been the Navy, et cetera, but it just happened to be this spiritual place. And the thing that I remember, too, is just waking up at some god-awful hour in the morning to chant Gregorian chant without speaking, of course, because we had grand silence, as they called it. And that meant that we were silent a lot of the time, and it was a nurturing that set me off. I know it did. And it gave me the spirit I needed to know that, in a way, that I was going to survive all this, you know, the slings and arrows of misfortune, as well as all the very, very good things that would happen in my life. It set me up to know, to endure, to be resilient. And that's part of my story.
where I've
come from. And the other thing that happened in the monastery and the seminary was they taught me how to teach myself. They taught me how to read. I was not a very good reader growing up. We had too many other things to worry about. And I started learning, and I thought, oh, this is what it's all about. And I was captivated by the fact that my brain was active, and that I was learning things, and I was retaining, and I started growing intellectually as well as spiritually when I was in that priesthood for those 5 years.
Well, it's very interesting. In another layer, I have had the privilege of working with Celtic shamanism for many years, and what I'm hearing underneath the story of your story is that you are such an impactful teacher with books and games and activities impacting children and families and parents and adult learners, you know, the whole thing. And what's really interesting about the teacher archetype, and I really needed to learn this, because in the early days when you're out there in the world and you're a teacher, you know, it's like if only four people show up for your first class, you start questioning if you, you know, have any value or not, you know. And there's a thing in Celtic shamanism that the teacher that has a shadow that's not coming from the healthy teacher is about control and forcing and self-righteousness and arrogance and those kind of things. But the teacher that's healthy knows that everything's happening the way it's supposed to happen, that everything is right on time, that the right people are always there. And guess what the medicine is? The medicine is silence. So what's profound about your life is that in a monastery, you definitely learn to embrace, and silence is as important as food. And so here, it's pretty magical, your life, when you think about it that way, because children naturally crave silence, and then they're bombarded and taught noise. And so they have to adjust to noise. Am I right? I mean, with my 4-year-old little goddaughter, it's like I need to pre-warn her noise is coming. because she's like, what's that noise? What's that noise? And what's that noise? And what's that noise? And that's the way that I feel, Anthony, in current time, no matter what your age is, that that ought to be your response even today. Well, what's that noise? What's that noise I'm putting in my mind? What's that noise I'm putting in my head? What's that news noise that I'm putting in my energy? But after a while, unless someone's been grounded like you have and had that early exposure of cultivating resilience, they become that they're not comfortable without noise. I just got off on that tangent that doesn't go with the questions or anything I was supposed to ask you, but I just thought you would find that extremely interesting. And I was just having this aha moment about that, because that's what we're doing in our society, isn't it? Noise, 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 noise. And when you tell most adults,
I love the way you're phrasing that, because I think children, one thing I wanted to say, it just comes up right now in my mind from what you're just telling me, is that the Greek cultural belief in the power of story comes from the word paramithi. And paramithi in Greek means to advise and comfort and console. And I think that that's sometimes the joy of not only being the writer for children, but being with children with story. When you think about it, it's really a very silent time. There's a voice there, and the voice is the story speaking. And so they're opening doors and windows and portals, and they're also looking into mirrors, because sometimes that's what they discover. But it's a very contemplative time, and I see it all the time. And the silence, I'll go into a seventh grade classroom, and they have just come in from the hallway, and they're pushing each other and laughing hysterically and da 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 da. And as soon as the lights go down low, as it were, and the curtain opens, and I start saying, Lucas and the Game of Chance takes place on an Aegean island, and they are very poor folks. And it's just like, and it's that time of comfort, it's that time of solace. It's something is going on here that's leading us to contemplate.
Mm. That is so powerful. And this just became like your quest. You just knew that your work was not only be a storyteller, which is a tremendous gift and a tremendous joy to accept that's a role in life. But did you have a particular, defining moment, other than people wanting kind of some similarities to the life that you had known?
I think what happened was I fell into teaching. I was an aide, a teacher's aide, in the first summer of Head Start. And I was in New Jersey. And it was a very these people that sent their children to Head Start, there was a lot of poverty. And I watched this teacher nurture these kids, and I watched her take on this responsibility. And I just looked at it and I thought, I think I want to do this. I don't know how. How do you learn how to do this, And that started it all. That was like an epiphany for me, to begin to understand that if I did do this, if I did go into teaching, I wanted to be able to be that kind of person who nurtures but from a very sincere place. Now, I don't want to be artificial about it. I want to be sure that what I'm doing is showing students whatever. You know, I didn't know. I had no idea then that I was going to be on the university level. I was working in, you know, preschool and elementary, et cetera, that I wanted them to, I wanted to be able to show them their worth, their worthiness, and one level in their own spirituality. That could I possibly do that? Well, of course, what I thought I would do was to try to do that with literature, because it seems to me that literature is its own way of being able to nurture those kinds of entities in our life, you know. So I promised myself, you know, and I carried on trying to learn how to be a teacher, how to be a good teacher. It was very demanding, and I kept at it. I kept looking at different ways of structuring it, of saying it, of speaking it, of learning how to jump on a desk and act it out, until they looked at me like he's crazy. And I thought, yes, yes, that's right. I am a little crazy, but oh, listen to what I'm going to say here. I'm on top of this desk. I'm going to tell you about Shakespeare, you know, and that type of thing. So, I mean, I went in and out of these situations, you know, and I thought, all right, now, I'm gonna use some of the drama that I know, that I feel comfortable with, and I do, you know, I just do. I was born with that spirit of you know, of acting it out, and actually started teaching theater courses, especially at the university. But I wanted to use drama as a way, a medium for learning, and that became kind of like my brand in my teaching. You know, and I liked it because if you think about theater, you think that you're always a little, all right, so the lights are low and you're in this room and you're always a little bit shocked because so much is being discovered. And especially if it's a good play, you kind of walk away thinking, what just happened? That was really something. What was that? Let me call somebody and talk about it. You know, so, and that's kind of what I wanted my students to do, you know. And so that little epiphany in that school in Orange, New Jersey, led me down the road to try to understand what it means to teach. And I didn't, you know, I never stopped.
It's so powerful. Many years ago, I had a self-discovery learning center on the East Coast of Florida, and I was in my early days of ministry, and there was a jazz teacher that came, had taught children. And anyway, they, according to the people that sent him, he was highly credentialed and stuff like that. And he had a very thick resume. And I said to him, because he was wanting to talk about the resume, I said, well, the first question I need to ask you is, why are you interested in teaching children? Or why do you, you know, want to teach children? And he said, in my entire career, nobody's ever asked me that. And I said, well, to me, that would be the most important question for someone to ask you. And that what impresses me, and not that I need to be impressed by you, I didn't mean it to sound like that, but in looking at your website, anthonymannabooks.com, I love that you have letters from your students on your website. That says so much about who you are, and that you are always real clear in your value of that you are here to be a teacher and a model storyteller for the kids. So anyway, I just wanted to highlight that. I've never seen that before. I've interviewed a lot of people that talk about their love for kids and those kind of things. And I'm sure they feel that way, but you show it by sharing their letters and their hearts. That's just really powerful. They call you Professor Grandpa Tonio.
Yeah.
Your Professor Grandpa,
Professor
don't
Gramp.
you know, would be the more they like
That's
it,
my
right?
alter. Now you picked up on that. That's my alter ego, you know.
I'm hearing you. I'm tuned into you. I really am. You developed early on this way of going through resilience, and you probably use this, but one of the things I've used for years is, you know, you put your whole self in, you pull your whole self out, you put your whole self in, and you turn yourself around. And I always like to highlight that life asks you to put your whole self in first. It doesn't say, now wait until you get yourself turned around. And that's your approach with cultivating resilience, is it not? You're talking about how you can have that courage to move you through struggles and persevere and survive. I mean, that's the process that you prepare kids and parents who have kids to walk through, correct?
Oh, I mean, that's the key, you know, because I think that, you know, I could say, you know, that first of all, when I'm with kids, let's say in my role as a storyteller or an author, a writer, you know, I certainly want to, you know, to entertain them. I mean, the story is there for entertainment. I want them to, you know, to get excited about that, to stay with the characters, to learn something. But I also want them to look at. To start noticing life's struggles and mysteries. And there will be hard times. There will be loss. There will be separation. But courage and perseverance. And lately, for me, too, mindfulness can open the way to hope and recovery. You know, and you know, I'm saying it now. It's almost like an intellectual exercise, but the kinds of things that I've had to go through in my life, early on, 19 years old, my very good friend in the seminary went into the hospital for what they thought was appendicitis, and they gave him a shot of sodium pentothal, and he died on the table. And that just blew me away, you know? And so I thought, now, oh gosh, you know, was this supposed to happen? Well, I was in that trusting environment, you know what I mean? And that trusting environment was all about, this is going to happen. This sometimes happens. So what do we do? Well, in those days, it was a lot of prayer, you know, because I was very much into Christian praying and Christian prayer. And it was, you know, it was getting me through. You know, so, but there are other ways of doing that, of course, but at that time, that's what got me through. So what can get kids through? I think if they're given, you know, good art, good music, good this, good that, to see the world around them and have it illuminated in some fashion, then I think they'll begin to see, you know, what it's all about in terms of, the, you know, the hope and the recovery, but also the hardships that we all have to face.
Mm-hmm. Like the being aware of the noise, but you know, that's so significant with so many of us, our years of art, our sports, in some cases, those are lessons and responses that we tend to use in our proactivity all of our lives.
Yeah. I'm thinking now, my grandson, my oldest grandson is 17, and he decided one day to drop out of school. And he, I was shocked, you know, because here I am, this...
Yeah, you know, this professor, educator. That would have been hard for
yeah,
you.
I'm here, you know, and they're out in Arizona, and I couldn't get out there right now. But I just thought, have you lost your mind? What's going on? I don't understand, you know. And there were a lot of reasons why, and some of it was social anxiety. So he's he's a mystery to me right now, and I feel tongue-tied. I don't quite know what to say. I keep asking about him, and he's doing virtual learning, you know, through the computer, and I hope, you know. But see, then what I have to do is, rather than lament, because that's such an easy place to go for this young man, as my mother would say, your blood, he's your blood. She would say that in Italian. It sounds ridiculous now, but I mean, I understand what she's getting at. He's that line, you know. And I don't want to lament it, though, because I think that, to learn as I'm learning from mindfulness, and to learn as I'm learning from, I've been studying Buddhism of late, is that he's where he needs to be right now. He's living his days out, and they're positive. He's not harming anyone. He's probably looking into himself. You see what I mean? So I can turn that around, you know, and make it something so utterly positive. You know, it's like knowing that this very moment that I'm having with you, Reverend Temple, is exactly where we're always meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the gift.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's so the gift, isn't it, that when we can
see
ourselves from what we think is supposed to be, and that, yeah, and beautiful for you, that as strong of a core as you have in education, that you could validate him. Talking to Anthony Mana, you can go to anthonymanabooks.com. Be right back after this short break, and we just love all of you tuning in and sharing our show.
We're glad you found us. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back to The Intentional Spirit with Reverend Temple Hayes.
Welcome back, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in. You can always visit me at templehayes.com or firstunity.org, the spiritual community in which I have the pleasure of serving. And we have a new institute, a university online. Yes, we do. That empowers people as lifelong learners and also people that want to be credentialed. And that's illi.org. That's ILLLI.org, the Institute for Leadership and Lifelong Learning. Well, talking about lifelong learning, we are getting blessed today by a great messenger, Anthony Mana, Dr. Anthony Mana. You can go to his website, Anthony Mana, M-A-N-N-A, books.com. And we have been talking about throughout the show the gems and wisdom that he has in his book, Lucas and the Game of Chance. And Anthony, you really are, and how timely of the energy of this book and how timely of your message. When we look at the second leading cause of death in young people being suicide. So you've got your work ahead of you, young man, you know, and I never thought I would say that out loud. And I don't imagine you ever imagined that you would hear it spoken out loud, that would be the second leading cause of death with ages 10 to 34. That's like shocking, isn't it?
Oh, awfully, terribly shocking. How could we lose these people? How did they get out of our venue, or to be able to imagine that they could take their life, when life is such a precious thing to hold on to nurture through all the difficulty, through all the blessings, through all the joys, through all the challenges, you know, that we need each other. We're all in this together. We need each other. And so to see someone slipping away is so frightening to me. So frightening.
And where does their resilience go? Or, I mean, obviously we're speculating, and I haven't spoken to anybody from the afterlife, but just with what you do and how you focus on cultivating resilience, for the parent that's listening now, for the grandparent, and there's so many that are raising their children now, what are some of the tools? What can we do to cultivate more of that resilience?
So important. I think a lot of it has to do with belonging and connecting, and learning how to reach out. Just sometimes just calling and maybe talking about what you're feeling, you know, and to someone that really cares, you know, and just residing in the fact that you are a precious and worthwhile, and that you can have all of the skills you need and all of the talent you need to make it through. And I think that's to me so much of what I've endured in my lifetime, even in the darkest moments, that I knew that there were people there, you know. And one of the other things, of course, is because of my work in the classroom. I mean, you know, I was beholden, you know, and I needed to reach out to these many, many students over many, many years on every single level. I mean, going from kindergarten, preschool, a kindergarten in Greece, up to, you know, students who were working on their doctorate. You know, and it was always the same thing, you know, that, you know, is something wrong today? I would say, you know, to see a student in front of me, especially sometimes with the undergraduates, because it's such a difficult time, you know, leaving home, coming there, and I would see something, and I would just say, is there something wrong? Do you need to talk to me? You know, and I thought, boy, that was really a bold thing to ask somebody. But I thought, well, why not? You know, why not? You know, and sometimes they really would take me up on it, and they would come and talk to me. And I'll never forget the one student who was really kind of blue a lot, and she came in and to me, she said, I need to talk to you. And she had, this is very dramatic, and I don't mean to hurt people by saying this, but she was at a party where they were getting very drunk, and she jumped off a balcony. And she said, I don't really know whether I jumped or I was pushed or whatever, but I'm now mechanical. And I said, what do you mean? She said, they had to put me all back together again. And that's why I walk the way I walk. And you'll see me, you know, shaking a lot, et cetera. So she came to see me several times and we talked about it. I said, just tell me what it's like, you know. And then eventually she came to my office with her family. And they said, this is great. Thank you so much. And I said, no. She helped me because I needed to hear her talk to me about how she made it through. And I was startled by her courage. And now what she's doing is she goes to schools. She goes to high schools. And she shows them, illustrates to them the reasons why they have to hold on to their dignity. And their resilience, because that's what she's done. And I don't know where she came from in our conversation, Reverend Temple, but she's always there. I know she's there waiting for me because she taught me so much. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lot of, I think the courage and her carrying on and her willingness to go out there in her state, because she's quite handicapped, as it were, challenged. And she goes out there, you know, and that's a pretty good example, I think, of a person who could have very easily taken her own life because she was so battered. But she got up, she took a breath, she got up, and because of her loving family, especially, she carried on. And I see that with my character, with Lucas in my story. I mean, he's been through quite a lot, you know, and he taught me that he could make it.
And you use a lot of Greek folk tales in your book. And what is it about the Greek folk tales that, you know, creates such a sense of resilience?
What a great question. I should just back up a little bit. When I was still at Kent State University in Ohio, there was an exchange program. And what that meant was you applied to go to Greece. It was the Greek exchange program. You applied to go to Greece, and you applied to go there to teach and to research or do whatever a professor's supposed to do. And to make a long story really short, I wound up in the city of Thessaloniki, which is on the Bulgarian, it's up way up north, on right very close to Bulgaria. And it's an ancient city. It was established, I think it was 33 BC. And I fell in love with the world there. And I found myself in a kindergarten classroom because I knew that if I went to school, I would learn about the children, their families. I would learn about Greek Orthodoxy. I would learn about the secular holiday, you know, because it was going to be a school year. And the kids were, they had story hour, and they would, and I could hear as I was beginning to hear Greek, I could hear the stories, you know, they were reading stories of Greek mythology, you know, Zeus and Hector, and, you know, all these characters kept coming up, and I was very familiar. But then all of a sudden I started hearing about wild beasts and sibling rivalry and nasty parents and good parents and, journeys that take people far, far away until they lose themselves only to come back and try to regain themselves. And I said to my Greek colleague who was in the same room doing research, I said, Sula, what's going on here? And she said, these are our folk tales and fairy tales. And I said, ooh, that began the project. And so as I started studying them, I went into the traditions and I just started reading as best I could. I was even starting to translate from the Greek to the English, you know, and we would go out and look for stories that I said, you know what, I want to translate some of these. I want to reshape them. I want to reformulate them. I want to retell them. I want to bring them into the English speaking world, because I know for a fact that I've been teaching children's literature at the university and we hardly have these Greek stories. So what drew me to them so much is the sincerity of, once again, of the struggles that we go through, what we must do to face those struggles, and how we can carry on. How we can carry on. Now, people often know fairy tales and folk tales to have happy endings. They do, yes, they do, but it's a happiness that's won. And number two, it's a happiness that these characters have to settle into. It's not like la, 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 la. You know what I mean? It's not like everything's rosy. You know, it's more like, all right, we did it. We got here. Now what do we do? And it's been an amazing journey for me because I have learned so much about Greek culture through these stories. And the other thing about it was I was collaborating with my Greek colleagues. And so here I was learning Greek culture from, you know, right at the same computer, because we're reshaping these stories. And what a great joy, you know. And it was all about endurance, life and living, sacrifice, learning how to be oneself, learning to compromise. And it was just like I was right back again into the fundamentals. You know what I mean? I just can't get away from them. even in my old age, I'm still learning the fundamentals, you know. And it's a blessing because it keeps reminding me of what it means to be alive.
That's really powerful. It's very powerful. As you were talking earlier, I guess we're talking in some ways just like the young woman you refer to. She then became archetypal, you know, right? I think yeah. about a woman here who was a major in the military, a curriculum writer, you know, many accomplishments, and you know, and just a great human being. And she was given the wrong medication in the VA hospital. And when I went to see her, Anthony, other than blinking her eyes, she could move one knuckle that could be seen. And I hovered somewhat over her, and I said to her, because, you know, you just go with what you're guided to say. And I said, "Are you ready to get out of here?" And I said, "If you want to get out of here, blink your eyes." And she did. And yeah. she has learned how to do everything all over again. And now she rides horses, and she's a student in our institute, becoming a minister. And she's on our board of trustees here. And that's a great archetypal thing, that there's such strength when, you know, you catch yourself saying, "Well, this and that, and this and that." You know, you think of someone like your friend, or I think of someone like my friend, and I go, "Wow, you know, if they can do what they've done and still be quote unquote handicapped, then that level of resiliency is so there for everyone." For everyone.
Oh, so powerful. That's so powerful, you know, and that's the segue right back to children, because I think that's what they could learn. I'm sure they can. I'm talking about my own perspective, which is mostly the literary arts, you know, and I think that they can learn so much about resiliency, and they can learn so much about the courage, you know, because stories, poems, plays, whatever, they're windows and they're mirrors. And, they come up into community when they're reading and writing and listening to stories being told. And I think that, you know, they're not always able to articulate it, but that's what we're there for. You know, that's what I'm there for, is to say, well, let me tell you about this character Lucas and what he told me, and as I was getting to know him, you know, and what he told me about his disappointment in the mistakes that he made at that card game, the game of chance, which is the title, right? And it set him off, and it set up his epiphany. He needed that to go out there. He needed that. And where does he go? He goes to he has to go through the dark night of the soul into that enchanted forest where he's being accosted by people who are so needy, and they all want him to intervene for them. And where is he going? He's going to meet Destiny and her son, the sun, and her daughter, the moon, and he's going to beg them, "Please, how can I rectify my life? How can I get it back? I lost my family. I lost my fortune, and I lost my family. What can I do to gain it back?" And they, you know, and he learns what he has to do from them, and he learns forgiveness, and that he's okay. He's okay. We all make mistakes sooner or later. We all fail sometimes. We experience tough times, but we can all find the courage to face our struggles, to persevere, survive, and turn our life around. And that's the gist of that story for kids.
Wow. Wow.
I loved Destiny. I just thought, oh boy, let's be friends. I have some things I need to tell you.
I know. That's probably another part of resilience, is that things are happening for so many more reasons than we're ever aware of. And that's what I teach my ministerial students. You know, don't just respond or take things at face value. You know, use spiritual seeing and spiritual hearing, which is very different from human seeing and human hearing. More often, there's so much more than even what we know. You know, like you and I, we came together to do radio. And we came together to talk about your phenomenal book. Of course, that's those elements of it. But the deeper part is a soul recognizing another soul saying, wow, how the heck have you been? You know, let's talk about Lucas and the Game of Chance, but let's also talk about with 7.5 billion people that life has brought us together right now. And how cool is that? You know, I just want to laugh.
I know what you mean.
I don't say that to all my guests. Oh, I'm so glad you're on the call. I just want to laugh. No, but with your energy and your website, and obviously what you represent, and I'm sure this is true, that the reason that children are so drawn to you and that parents are drawn to you is because you're comfortable. I believe it's because you're comfortable with every age that you are. And to me, that has always been my goal in life, is to be comfortable with every age that I have been and every age that I will be. A very separate topic from being old and things that people make up, you know, and the way you're duped to buy drugs or pharmaceutical or, you know, whatever. But I'm talking about just the energetic self is really ageless. And I hear people, educators and ministers, you know, and leaders say, well, I just can't get young people to relate to me. It's like, well, because you don't relate to the young part of yourself. You know, that's a big part of that connection. If you relate to it, then therefore, you know, that's what it's all about. You're resonating with the teenager, you know, those kind of things. Anyway, we have to do another show. One isn't long enough.
I know. Well, it's been wonderful. I mean, I just feel like, you know, it's so nice to share. And I really adore the concept of, or you're saying that, you know, we were meant to meet soul to soul. And that is so true. I mean, because that's the subtext, you know, or the archetype, as you put it, you know, I think the archetype that I love so much. And I think I hear a little bit coming from you too, is that this is a journey, you know, and it's a prize. It's a blessing. And it's been given to me, and I want to nurture it as best I can, and celebrate it and appreciate it. And that's why I came to you today.
Mm. Wow. Oh, I just love life. I'm right there with you. It gets better all the time. And, you know, I mean, we go through all these layers of things, and we face things in our culture and in our world we never thought we would, like we're in the midst of a pandemic. But I just always hold the space that on the other side of it, we're going to be so much more than what we started out to be in the first place. And that's what you're all about. That resilience, that other unknown side, that mysterious side on the other side of it, you're going to be, no matter your age or whatever, you're going to be so much more. If that's the belief that you hold, I think it's important to hold that belief. Otherwise, you can very easily be herded like cattle and play that part in not being a thinking person. But it's very, very crucial. I'm talking with Dr. Anthony Manna. You can go to his website, anthonymannabooks.com. And I just appreciate all of you being engaged in this conversation. And it's an important conversation for us to be having now. It's also an important conversation for you to share with other people. So take the time and pass along on your social media this show, as well as the information about Dr. Anthony, because this is powerful stuff. And this is our time in our history and in our lifetime that we really need people to know this information is out there. And you can introduce children to games and storytelling and Greek folk stories and storytelling that is very healing. So, wow, we're coming to an end of our show. And in a couple of minutes, can you just leave us with some words of wisdom?
Well, oh no, I can't. I can't do that. I could just say, carry on and let's move forward together, you know, and to know that there are people out there listening to this and knowing that I hope they're nodding, you know, and also nodding at this wonderful opportunity that you gave me today. And this whole idea of the intentional spirit, which is, I've been thinking about it ever since I saw the title of your show. I've been thinking about, what is my intention today? You know, why am I here? What is my spirit? What is the intentional spirit within me? And may everybody listening to this find the courage in these very difficult times to carry on and keep praying in whatever fashion that may mean to you. And let's do this together.
And together's the word. I mean, talk about an awakening of really, really, really understanding that we really need each other.
Oh, yeah.
On this incredible journey we call life, we need each other more than we would ever realize. I have learned something in this last month, and that is I really enjoy hugging. And I have really missed that, okay? Yeah. I have my mom that lives not far from me, and, I've seen her a number of times, but I'm just being aware since I'm around so many people, you know, and I just miss hugging. So, put that on your list, everyone, because that's part of being resilient as well, is that human touch and connection and that wonderful power. But again, seriously, take advantage of this website, anthonymannabooks.com, and look up the various games and activities and things that he offers and the insights, because we're called now. All of us are called. And we're called to make a giant step towards the betterment of our society. God bless you, Anthony. We will meet again.
Same to you. Same to you, Reverend Temple. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your blessings.
Thank you for listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Since 1977, Omega Institute in New York's beautiful Hudson Valley has hosted some of the best spiritual teachers and social visionaries sharing their messages of hope, healing, and transformation. On the Dropping In podcast, hosted by Emmy Award-winning producer Callie Alpert, you will enjoy in-depth interviews and conversations with people like Pema Chodron, Jack Kornfield, Jon Kabat-Zinn, and many others on the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network. Also, check out the video series on Spotify.